Radio Reverb, Brighton Festival 2017. Now, all of the news, reviews, and what not to miss at Brighton Festival 2017 with Melissa Dennett on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM, the only station on air with a dedicated Brighton Festival hour.
You heard what the lady said. You're listening to Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. We're on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. I'm Melissa Dennett. This is Wednesday's Brighton Festival special. We're here Monday to Friday during the festival between 5 and 6 p.m, repeated at 10 o'clock and 8 a.m. the next day. And for the next 3 weeks, we're going to be looking behind the scenes at the Brighton Festival, meeting some of the performers, the creators and the people who make it happen. On today's programme, we're hearing about a take on Swan Lake, which repositions it in Irish mythology. We'll be visiting an unsettling exhibition of dolls and fantastical creatures. And hearing how dance and video combine to challenge expectations or perceptions of young people in internet culture. That's in the next hour here on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. Starting the programme now, this is some Brighton music. This is Loyal and Moving as One.
So gather what you need and meet me by the ocean.
That's Brighton's Loyal, starting off the programme there, the Brighton Festival Special with Melissa Dennett on Radio Reverb 97.2 FM. We're here Monday to Friday, live between 5 and 6, bringing you the inside track on what's happening at this year's Brighton Festival. And you can catch the repeat at 10 o'clock the same night and then 8 a.m. the next morning. There are podcasts galore to follow. So if you miss the programme, catch up with Radio Reverb on Twitter and you will find the podcast there. And a new version of Swan Lake is on at the Brighton Festival. It's usually the most traditional of ballets, but Irish company Chuck Dumser are retelling the story based around ancient Irish mythology and accompanied by Nordic and Irish traditional music. I went to the Dome earlier to meet its creator, Michael Keegan Dolan.
Hi, my name is Michael Keegan Dolan, and I'm a director and choreographer, and I'm here in the Brighton Festival with my company Chuck Dausa, formerly the Fabulous Beast Dance Theatre, and we're presenting a new production of Swan Lake at the Dome.
Now, Swan Lake, people think about ballerinas in tutus, wobbling around on points, very traditional ballet. I've got a sneaking suspicion this is not like that.
No, it's not. It's not like that at all. And I think, you know, the myth or the legend that the ballet is founded upon has been around a lot longer than ballerinas put on point shoes for the first time in, you know, I don't know, the 19th century. So I focused in on the story and I try to connect it to place, to where I live in Ireland. And of course, we have a myth that's quite similar. It's called the Children of Lear. And it's about, boys and girls, young people being turned into swans by a jealous stepmother. So there's lots of parallels in my mythology and in the Middle European mythology in which Swan Lake is based.
Now, I haven't actually seen it myself. I'm looking forward to coming later tonight. What can I expect? Without giving too much away.
Yeah, I think the best way to come at this is to come with no expectations. A friend of mine who I haven't seen in maybe 35 years came last night with no expectations, and he really, really enjoyed the unexpected nature of what he saw. I think I spend most of my adult life trying to forge a type of theatre that's like kind of complete theatre, total theatre, or like dance theatre, we call it, where we have dancing and storytelling and song and imagery and light, and they're kind of merged into one seamless event. So I don't know what to tell you to expect, but I'm also trying to express something about the nature of life, and that life isn't entirely dark or entirely light, that it's a play between the two energies, and that, you know, to be kind of some way content within yourself, that you need to embrace the full nature of what it means to be human.
For some people, they do find dance a difficult medium because they have an issue, I think, with like, am I going to understand it? And I think people do shy away from dance sometimes. Yeah. Does it really matter if you don't understand it?
I think it does and it doesn't. I think with the work I'm trying to make, and I'm beginning to succeed in making, I think the understanding thing is not an issue. So what we do is we put a layer on the surface, which is the story, and we tell you the story. So, you know, happy out. You've got the story and you can enjoy that journey. Then beneath that, there's other things going on. There's what each individual person within the company is telling, you know, with their body. And then there's the music, and then there's the imagery, and then there's the poetry of the imagery. So I think good theatre or good dance theatre is layered, and ideally it's for everyone. Now, I guess the only thing about my Swan Lake or our Swan Lake is that there is, we do touch on some darkness and some dark themes. So maybe for young children under the age of 14, that it's not going to be maybe ideal for them. But my children are 6 and 8, and they watched it, and oddly they laugh at the bits that adults find most disturbing. So so yeah, I think dance has had a hard rap really since kind of the 17th century. At some point I read that Oliver Cromwell had made dancing illegal in England. I think dance, you know, in the Christian tradition, dance is associated in some way with the devil and with being naughty, as you guys say. We say bold, and with being kind of unpredictable and unreasonable. And I think that's connected to the understanding thing. But I think if it's presented in the right way, in the right context, you don't need to worry about understanding. It's really about feeling and empathizing and about motion. And we all move, even till the moment we pass out, we're still in some sort of motion. So no, don't worry about understanding it. I think this one will go way beyond that for you.
I've been given to understand that 2 tons of feathers are involved in this.
I think the 2 tons, that's a bit of an exaggeration, because even a lot of feathers ain't going to weigh 2 tons now. There's a lot of feathers, yeah, in the end of the show. And I find this also fascinating, because feathers, they're white feathers, and by their nature, they're ethereal and beautiful and light. But in truth, I bought this big bag of feathers from a chicken factory in County Monaghan in the north of Ireland, and I stuck it in a container for about 10 years because I didn't know what to do with it. And one day we were working on the show and we thought, I'll go get those feathers. So I find them really exciting, you know, because they represent those two narratives, how beautiful and light and ethereal on one hand, and on the other hand, these are dead animals. Clothes. So yeah, they are very beautiful and very effective, and I think people really love the feathers.
I bet the cleaners didn't.
It depends on how many cleaners you got. So like in Dublin, we didn't have too many cleaners. In fact, I was one of the cleaners. So we had a couple of hoovers. But like in a venue like here, there's a good gang of guys, and I think they clean them up pretty quick. But you always find feathers somewhere. Even like years later, you find one stuck down the back of something, you know, which is nice.
So what's been the response of the Brighton audience so far?
Well, so far we've done one show last night, and unless I was hallucinating, I think 800 people were standing and cheering as I left the auditorium. And I think it went extremely well. I think the show tonight will be better, because whenever you come to a new venue, and you know, the Dome is a particular venue, it's a big circular space, probably ideal for concerts and maybe not bespoke for theatre. When you come to a new venue, it takes a little time to kind of get used to it. It's a bit like meeting a new person. And I think my guys, the company, came to terms with the venue last night, and I think tonight it'll be cranked up another notch. I'm really looking forward to seeing that.
As Michael Keegan Dolan talking about his production of Swan Lake, and the second and final performance is tonight at the Dome. Tickets are available online from brightonfestival.org. And if you're pretty quick, I'm looking at the clock now, if you listen to the live show, you might well be lucky enough to pick up a festival standby ticket for just a tenner. In just a few minutes' time, I'm going to be talking to Rebecca Sandell. She's been to see Endings at the Old Market in Hove. I'll be finding out what's happening there. Before that, from Brighton, this is the Isle of Cece. Loving that track so much. That's Brighton's The Isle of Cece. Very, very cool there. You're listening to the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett, and joined by our reporter Rebecca Sandells, who's been out to see Endings at the Old Market in Hove. Welcome to Radio Reverb, Rebecca.
Thank you, Melita. It's May. I'm sitting opposite you in the studio. It must be Brighton Festival.
It must be Brighton Festival. Now, this is one of those shows that I look at it in the programme and I go like, okay, what? So it's got quite an enigmatic kind of description, talking about a part chamber concert, part performance.
Right. Well, let's start with the who. Who's it by? The performer and the writer of the piece is an Australian called Tamara Solwick. Now, her background is in digital, mobile and analogue technologies, and her thing is sound in live performance.
Okay.
Now, for me, this has got you written all over it. So, and her work aims to reflect how individuals connect, confront and interact. Now, there's a clue in what the focus of this is in the name, Endings.
Right.
We've already heard a bit of sort of death and
Don't worry, there's more to come in the programme. Don't worry about that.
Okay. So it's about death. And I mean, there's no way of saying it's subtly about death. I mean, there's the performance covers last breaths, the warmth leaving a body, and it's all very intimate, and yet at the same time very brutal, because the lighting, with one exception, is all white. Black, the scene is all black, and the lighting is all white, quite stark light.
Quite clinical.
Yes.
Yeah.
Although, it gets a warmth when it's faded slightly. And the other interesting thing for myself, having a sort of background in radio, was that at one point they play around with analogue sound, 45 RPMs. There's sort of two little turntables that they use to play back the recordings of various people talking about their health, their mortality, their experience, and sort of talking to family members, etc. And so they're kind of mixing, DJing these. And I'm using my hands to do DJing motions.
Yeah, this works on the radio. Yeah, she's doing DJing motions with her hands here.
Oh dear,
she's air scratching.
And at one point they bring out there's two ewers they're using, because they're using reel to reel as well, and they actually managed to sort of be dragging the sound from one ewer to another using the tape across the stage with the performers. Yeah, even if death in itself is not a subject that interests you, and I think the only thing that we both have absolutely in common, Melita, is that we will both die. So
I wasn't working on that actually, but yeah, okay.
But it's something that everyone, all of us, have in common.
Yes.
So as a subject, it sort of touches all our lives.
That sounds like there's quite an interesting parallel there as well, because the development of early recording was very much about preserving the voices of the dead as well, and people were very much thinking about, let us capture the voices of people while they're alive and capture them on wax cylinders for posterity. So I guess there might be an element of sort of thinking back to those original ideas as well.
It sounds like it. That's not something that I was aware of, but it makes sense within it. I mean, apparently, according to the programme notes, the idea was born out of her son asking about a dead fly and what happened to the dead fly and why she'd flung it out of the door, and
nice.
won't the fly be cold? And then, where will you be when I die, Mummy? And so the play's kind of exploring our relationship with those who are no longer here, and how we feel about that, and how we feel, in ourselves. So she describes it as a homage to loved ones no longer living. I found it really interesting on a number of levels, and the lighting at times, although it's so simple, was quite stunning. But afterwards, I walked out, still trying to process it, because when you've sat through, and it's only an hour, it's a festival piece, it's short, and you're in and you're out, and that's it. Like life, really.
Oh. Getting very philosophical here, Rebecca.
But as I walked out, I walked up to four people who'd also been in the audience and asked them about their experience and how they'd found it. And I hadn't sort of done that normal, can I just check, did you enjoy it, before I asked the question.
Yeah.
And the first man sort of looked at me and went, no, didn't get it, didn't do anything for me. And I was like, oh, this is a bit embarrassing. And then the other three people absolutely enjoyed the show. One worked with people who were very ill, elderly people, and found a lot to relate to in the experiences that it was telling. So it was interesting that sort of three out of four found it a great show. One woman described it as beautiful, which, given the very simple black and white scenery lighting effects, with the exception of once when there's a red light introduced, and I won't, that scene,
you're not going to spoil that.
No,
okay,
exactly.
Don't spoil that for anyone.
There is hazing and occasional flashing lights, is all I'm going to say. That three out of four finding it beautiful and interesting, I think, is a good return.
Right. Okay. So it's definitely something you would recommend, but is it depressing in any way?
No.
Or if someone's feeling a little bit kind of vulnerable, might it make them feel a bit grimmer?
I think. Probably if you've suffered a bereavement in the previous month or so, and are two or three months, and are still feeling extremely raw on it emotionally, you might find it might spark some feelings, emotions for you. But if you're someone who that who has experienced bereavement, and most of us over a certain age certainly have.
Sure.
And if you're someone that's interested in exploring how we deal with it, how we feel about it, and how we discuss it and take it, you know, amongst ourselves and live with it and process that, I think it's a fascinating piece.
Well, that's Tamara Solwick's Endings. It's taken place at the Old Market in Hove. Runs through to Saturday. Performance is nightly 7:30 with an extra Saturday matinee at 2 p.m. Rebecca Sandals, thank you very much for that. And be hearing about some of the other things that you've been casting your eye over at the Brighton Festival soon.
Great. Thanks,
Cheers.
Anita.
Playing on Friday night at the Dome, this is Ocean Wisdom. Oh, yeah, that's going to be a goodie, isn't it? That's Ocean Wisdom. You can see performing on Friday at the Dome. You listen to the Brighton Festival special on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM, on DAB and online at radioreverb.com. And visual artist Kathy Pilkington has created a striking mixed media exhibition which explores images of women, memories of childhood and the uncanniness of dolls. The Life Rooms is at the University of Brighton Gallery at Grand Parade. And I went there earlier to meet Kathy to see it for myself.
My name's Kathy Pilkington. The show that I've put on in Brighton Festival is called The Life Rooms, and it's two fairly large installations in the University Gallery space. There are two very distinct rooms and they've got a very different kind of character.
I have to say, just walking around here, it's dark. It's a very dark exhibition. There are dolls, there are mutant animals, there are nightmarish scenes. What is it that you're trying to convey with this exhibition?
Well, it's interesting. A lot of people say that to me. I think it's also very beautiful and formally very carefully considered. So although there are these dark narrative aspects to the work, it's not the whole story. I also don't think there's anything that's beautiful that doesn't have a dark side either. So I'm talking about life, really. I'm talking about what it's like to be alive, what it's like to be in a body, what it's like to think about life, what it's like to have children, what it's like to live and know that you're going to die, all the kind of basic human questions that we have.
Much of the exhibition is based around dolls. There is something uncanny about a doll, isn't there? On the one hand, you've got the kind of the childlike simplicity of a doll and the pleasure of a doll that a child might have. On the other side, you've got that uncanniness of the human, not human. It looks like that's something you're really playing with in this exhibition.
I've always been really interested in inanimate objects that pretend to be alive. And that might be your grandma's ornament, a doll, or a piece of classical Greek sculpture. I've always been really, really interested in Freud's essay on the uncanny. And in the 80s, I saw Mike Kelly's Uncanny Show the first time he staged it, and was massively relieved that someone had taken on, I think at the time, that kind of figuration wasn't really being used in art. And it was very, very out of fashion. And I felt very kind of out of step with what was going on. And Mike Kelly's exhibition was a real kind of like a life buoy to me, because it talked about figuration in the whole of culture, not just in fine art, in the way that we have always had the impulse to make figures, whether they be fertility symbols or toys or icons, you know, religious objects. So it gave me permission really to carry on with the things that had always interested me.
Can we pop round the corner, because there is a most striking part of the installation around here, and you do have to kind of weave your way around these things, and you see things which actually catch you quite by surprise. So we've got a baby here tied to a post being savaged by a rabbit.
that's the wonderful story of the tar baby. That's from Brer Rabbit. So this structure is called Harmonium, and it contains a lot of initially separate narrative scenes that I'd shown on their own in their own right. This is like a compilation, almost like an album or a book of collected poems, where they're all contained together in one structure, and the structure is made in a kind of roughshod kind of garage furniture manner. It's made out of pegboard and ribbon curtains and things that I associate with growing up in the 70s.
So around this corner here is a doll, life size, of a child looking very intently into a mirror on an antique dressing table. What's actually happening?
This piece is called Curio. And the sculpture of the figure, like you say, it's life-size. She's a little bit like those charity boxes that we used to around.
Yes.
I've always been really interested in those things. And she's also, she's like some of the ornaments that she surrounds herself with. So I was looking at a lot of those historical pictures of children where they're dressed as mini adults and they're contained and constricted and presented as these objects. And I'm really interested in, that's one of the things I love about dolls, because you can talk about the object and the subject at the same time. And here she's very directly sitting beside the objects that perhaps she's collected and looking at herself in the mirror. So you've got a whole disorientating scene that you enter into. You're really pulled into it and you're really engaged by it, and at the same time you're kind of repelled by it as well. And that's the thing I'm really trying to do in all my work.
I'm really getting a sense of the gothic from you here. But there's something interesting as well in that she actually looks at you when you position yourself in the right place. She's not looking at herself, she's looking at you.
I'm not quite sure where she's looking, actually. I think she's kind of refusing to fix her gaze. She's sort of looking at a space in between everything. So I think it's hard for her to look at you, and it's hard for her to look at herself as well. She's sort of in between.
Can we move through to the second room?
Sure.
I'm getting a sense in this second room of a homage to other artists here. So we've got some doll figurines, which are like Degas' ballet dancer.
Right, yeah.
There's a Magritte tribute round the corner.
Right, yeah.
I see a bit of Salvador Dali in there as well. Different kind of style that you've approached in this room.
This work is much more recent. The work I made next door is made probably about 5 years ago now. And this is the work that I'm actually engaged with now. You're right, the starting point of these dolls, they're called Degas Dolls 1 to 5, and they're taken from the poses anyway, are taken from Degas waxes that he made privately in his studio. They weren't ever made to be shown in an art gallery, and they were cast posthumously, and they were cast in bronze, and they were cast with their armature still attached to them. So there was something really exciting, always something really exciting to me, because there's an element of the process that's still visible. They're not finished and presented on a plinth. You can get close to the artist and close to the making process. So but these move aesthetically, they're a million miles away from the Degas dancers. They're not about gesture, they're not about messy clay like the work in the other room. They're much smoother, they're about the surfaces of dolls and dummies. And so we're moving into a slightly different territory that's it's less gestural.
So these five dolls are arranged on plinths, and there's a seating area around it and mirrors over there. They are naked, and they're also kind of mutated at the same time. Mm. Are you making a point here about us as the observers of the female form here, or not?
Well, certainly all that content is in the work. But, I would question, are they naked? Because if we look at these, we don't know if they're naked or if they're clothed or stitched,
because they're made
of a variety of different materials, and some of them look like dolls' legs, which are very dumb, unkind of modelled things that just suggest a limb. Other parts of the body are very, very particular. Often the faces are blank as well, so they're kind of dumb and receptive to our projection. So I'm trying to make something that's really, really interesting and engaging, but at the same time slightly unsettling, because I think the body is unsettling. It's an unsettling thing. We live in our bodies. We are quite estranged by our bodies. The formal setup of this room is a replica of the RA, the Royal Academy Life Room, where this installation has been shown. So it was shown there 2 weeks ago. So it's come directly from there to here, which is very exciting, to have it in a very different kind of space, to have a shop window almost. Of course, there are lots and lots of interesting questions about voyeurism and observation and the female model as well. Yeah. So these benches are a replica of the RA Life Room benches, and they've been made by the students in interior architecture here fantastically.
What are you hoping an audience will take away from this?
I hope the audience will really engage with the work, think about how the work is made, not just the image of what that work is, that they'll think about the processes involved, that they'll come and draw from the work and think about that. And also, I think some of these ideas that people are bringing, that this work is strange or unsettling, that they might spend a bit longer with it and actually see that there is a logic and a beauty and a kind of formal constraint in the work as well. It's not just about this sort of unbridled emotion.
That was Kathy Pilkington. She was talking about the Life Rooms. It's at the University of Brighton Gallery at Grand Parade. It's free entry and it runs daily through to the 27th of May. And I have to say, I absolutely loved it. And I do tend towards the darker side of things. So I'm going to go back there and have a proper look at it because it's really quite stunning. And it's one of those things that the more you look at it, the more different things you see. And there's so much in there. Absolutely fascinating exhibition there. So that's the Life Rooms, a University of Brighton Gallery at Grand Parade. You listen to Brighton Special, Brighton Festival Special on Radio Reverb with Melita Dennett. In a few minutes, time I'm going to be talking about a really fascinating video installation that challenges the whole kind of selfie culture and more. First of all, from Brighton, this is Teef and Sunsets East. So much good music coming out of Brighton. That's Teef. And the track is Sunsets East. You'll listen to the Brighton Festival Special on Radio Reverb with Melita Dennett live 5 till 6 on Monday to Friday. We've got another Saturday morning slot as well. And we're also repeated 10 o'clock on a weekday night and then 8 a.m. the next day. And Virgin Territory is a video installation which takes an uncompromising look at what it's like for young people to live in the digital era when every part of your life can be captured, shared and scrutinised, and how that sense of being observed can have a negative impact on many lives, especially those of young women. Using interviews and dance, where adults and young people interact together, Virgin Territory is a multi-screen experience at Onca Gallery at opposite St. Peter's Church. Well, it opened up today, and I went to meet its creator, Charlotte Vincent, earlier this week as it was being set up.
I'm Charlotte Vincent. I'm the artistic director of Vincent Dance Theatre, and I am in Onca Gallery, and we're just doing the get-in for Vincent Dance Theatre's Virgin Territory, which is a premiere commissioned by Brighton Festival of a film installation, multi-screen film installation of a show that I made last year, which has four fantastic local teenagers in and four very accomplished adult performers.
Sounds like it deals with a difficult subject. It's about the sexualisation of young women and that need for constant performance and the idea of being scrutinised, filmed, photographed.
That's right. Well, as you know, it's a problem I think that digital natives have. We have a whole generation growing up fully engaged with their digital devices as much as with real life. And I think the issue for young women specifically is that they're getting very sort of sexy, hot imagery that they're supposed to aspire to or replicate in their real lives. And they're posting things online and being groomed online, unfortunately, and coming across all sorts of pornography online. That is affecting the way they see themselves, the way that they feel about their self-worth, that it's sort of not okay to be natural anymore. They're aspiring, not everybody obviously, but a lot of teenage girls are aspiring to a completely unreal image of how women should look and behave. And I think sort of MTV video, music video culture isn't helping that. Advertising isn't helping that. Men's and women's magazines who, you know, all about body image, that's not helping that. And unlike myself, as I hurtle towards 50, young girls and young women today, I think, because they've got a constant stimulation through their mobile devices and their laptops and their tablets and their phones, they are bombarded by images that they are aspiring to that are completely unreachable. It's not possible to look like that most of the time. And on top of that, young boys and men are consuming, we know, a lot more pornography than they used to, and our whole society, I think, has been sort of pornographied, if that's a kind of word. So the mainstream culture of music and advertising, all the rest of it, when I grew up, wasn't quite as infected by these over-sexy images. And I personally, as an adult, as a mother, as an artist, just feel like it's overload. How do you negotiate that? So Virgin Territory is about not a return to a virgin territory, or it's a play on the word virgin, obviously, but it's about, we can't undo the digital world, we can't stop the internet, we wouldn't want to. It's brilliant in many ways, it's a positive force, but it also has a very dark side. And a lot of girls and young women and boys and men are falling into the trap of thinking that it's real life, and then applying the rules of what they see online to real life. Or the opposite, actually, that a lot of young girls have a life online that they can't live up to in real life. So they might present themselves pouting and looking really sexy with crop tops and push-up bras online on their Instagram or their Facebook accounts, and actually in real life they can't play it out. So like you said, there's this performing for the camera that we didn't have when we were growing up. And I'm not making a nostalgic piece, I'm just provoking thought around this subject.
It is a dance piece. It's an interesting subject for dance. You must have thought through, how can I actually portray this through that medium?
Yeah, I mean, I make dance theatre, so what's been really interesting is working with young people in the process of making this piece. And what we've done is, in the very early stages of research, I gathered interviews and talked to young women and girls about their experience just of living today with their digital devices and how they feel about this sort of hyper-sexualized culture that we live in. So I gathered these testimonies. And we used them in the making of the live work that we performed in London last November. And actually, interestingly, making the film version, the testimonies have come back in and they're very present. So the collaborators, who are remaining anonymous because obviously I don't want to expose some of the bad experiences that they've had, they're back in the installation, channeled by the adult performers. And a lot of their original voices actually ended up in the soundtrack, which is also a brilliant soundtrack by Jules Maxwell, a composer that I've worked with. So it really has been a collaboration between young people and adults, and their voices are very much in the work, describing their experiences. And as an adult, if you come in and you think it's a little bit paranoid or a little bit over the top, actually, I can stand by the work, because this is young people's voices telling me directly that they've had bad experiences, that they're surprised by, you know, when they wear certain clothing, the response that they get. And so what we need to do is educate young men to control themselves.
It's an interesting one, isn't it? And you did kind of you touched on something that I was wondering there. You know, you and I, we're not digital natives. We didn't grow up with the internet, and I was wondering if maybe some people might think, well, actually, you know, you're just old school, and you're being a bit preachy about this. And why don't you just let young people get on with what they know and what they do?
Yeah, I think that's why my response was just as it is, because I think the young people have told me that their digital nativism, if that's the right word, is affecting how they live, and they're under a constant pressure. And I think the piece is a provocation. It's not a preach, and all I'm trying to do with Virgin Territory is highlight the dangers of the internet and the dangers of hypersexualization, and question what we're going to do about it. I don't have any answers. You know, the internet's not going away. I think, obviously, as a lifelong feminist, I've been campaigning against that kind of imagery of women for a long time, and I think the thing that works in this particular installation is that the young women, Maya, Millie and Alicia, who are in the work, they're phenomenally strong. They hold their own in partner work in terms of dance. They dance with the men, they dance with the women. One of them's a footballer, one of them's a gymnast, one of them's a martial artist. And we show all that. So it's not all doom and gloom. We show that young women are strong and powerful, they find their voice, but we also show them as victims of grooming and of online abuse and sexual harassment in the street. Every day, women and young girls are being subjected to this. That's not hysteria on my behalf as a female maker. It is life. And I think that's the pressure that I'm talking about. The confusion lies around, they sort of buy into it and then they sort of run away from it. And I think that those hormonal years, like 12 to 14, 15, you know, some of the girls that I interviewed at 15 were talking about their experiences at 13 as though they were old women. You know, they were kind of going, oh, you know, all that time ago. They're only 15. You know, their experiences have been appalling, actually. That's why it's quite a dark piece. But there is some humour in it. There is some sort of piss-taking, as there always is in my work around British culture. There is a dark humour that always seeps back in when we make something. And it's quite exciting. You know, there's four big screens in a room, and it is dance theatre with text as well. The choreography is very exciting at times. It's very minimal at other times. It's a low-tech presentation of quite a complex, layered piece of work.
Do you feel a degree of frustration that it's a gallery space, it's a dance performance, it's in the Brighton Festival? Who is likely to come to it? Well, probably people who agree with you in the first place.
Yeah, it's a good question. We're running engagement workshops. We've actually done a lot of engagement so far in Brighton. So we've worked with Oasis, we've worked with DV8, we've worked with lots of different groups that we're building relationships with. Audio Active, we hope, will come down. So it's not just preaching to the converted. We're really looking to extend our audience through working on stage, on film and online, beyond the usual white middle-class dance audience who might go to the Dome. And I think, you know, Brighton Festival's really up for that. That's partly why they've commissioned it. Obviously, Kate Tempest's festival is doing that as a whole. It's trying to invite the community in and not preach the converted, but just involve them and say art is for everyone. And that's something in my practice over 26 years that I've always done. What we're trying to do as a company at the moment is meld sort of the high art bit with the community practice and make work that has people's, you know, real life voices in and also gets out of the arty venues into the community, either online or through our workshopping programme. And it's working.
As Charlotte Vincent, talking about her video installation Virgin Territory. It's at Onca Gallery, opposite St. Peter's Church, free entry, and it runs from Wednesday to Sunday, noon till 6 through to the 21st of May. And listening to that with me were our reporters, Alicia Theobald and Holly Simpson, who have literally hot-footed it to the studio from Virgin Territory. It's its opening day today. I have to ask you then, Alicia and Holly, how much did you recognise from your own experiences of what you saw in that installation?
As a woman who has obviously grown up using the internet most of my life, actually, I definitely picked up on the misconception of beauty and how you're expected to look a certain way. You're supposed to look feminine if you're a woman. You can't look any other different. And I think that's something that's not going away anytime soon, which is a real shame. But yeah, I definitely picked up on that. And I have to say, it made a really big impact watching some of those videos, especially because the woman was actually a man dressed up with this distorted mask on, this blonde wig and a dress.
Wow.
And I think, yeah, it just was really strange, but it made such an impact on me, I have to say.
Yeah, and my bit was like more the fact that this girl was being groomed at one point.
Mm-hmm.
And not that I've ever been groomed, but it's so easy to meet random people online.
Sure.
And that kind of hit me quite. I was like, yeah, it's really, really easy.
Because these are actually all taken from real life, individual personal testimonies. Did that give it much more impact for you?
Oh, definitely. I think you could tell just by the movement and like the way they were, like, or with the screen, because they literally looked directly at the camera and you felt like it was just you and them and they were telling you their story through what they were doing.
Yeah, I think it was really interesting how they used interpretive dance for a lot of the movements. And in fact, three of the young girls who were in it were standing in front of us and they were watching it.
Oh, and wow.
Yeah.
Really cool just to see them. They were dressed so nicely as well, like from what they were showing on the thing, I was a bit like, whoa. Because you could, they looked a bit different, obviously. So I was a bit like, oh, these are the same people.
Mm.
Do you think it was courageous for them to do it?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, some of the things they were doing, like standing and crying, just like a close-up of their face, it was really powerful.
Mm. So it sounds like a very effective installation then. You'd recommend it, would you?
Oh, yeah, I definitely recommend it, especially just to everyone, obviously, women, men, especially
yeah,
maybe
to
more
kind
men.
Of
to
get it
wins.
More out there as well, just the way the media does affect young people. That
yeah.
Probably don't realise how bad it is.
The awareness is really important, isn't it? I'd say.
Terrific. Well, Alicia Theobald and Holly Simpson, thank you very much for doing that. And we're going to be hearing more from you as you make your way around the festival. And also, I want to say a big thanks to Thameslink for supporting our Radio Reverb presenters. Thank you very much for joining us on the programme.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Cheers. You've been listening to the Brighton Festival special show with Melita Dennett on Radio Reverb, 97.2 FM on DAB and online. We're live Monday to Friday during the festival between 5 and 6, repeated 10 o'clock and 8 a.m. Thank you very much to this week's guests, today's guests rather, and to our reporters, Rebecca Sandals, Alicia Theobald and Holly Simpson. From me, Melita, I'm going to see you tomorrow. Going to play you out with Brighton's first World Pros. See you tomorrow. Bye.